it's time to follow the money with your hosts, Mitch Moss and Holly Howard.
All right, here we go. Good to have you on board. Live today in Las Vegas, Mitch Moss, Holly Howard, and Matt Eumanns. I am in the VSiN studio, South Point Sportsbook. Holly and Matty Ice at their homes today. Big, big show lined up. Adam Hill's going to join us. A UFC update coming up in about 5 minutes. We have Jeff Sherman on the program from the Westgate Superbook. Brett McMurphy, Dynamite College football reporter in 2 hours. And Chris Myers, Little Major League Baseball. Chris is now with Marquee Sports Network on in Chicago. He'll join us in the last hour of today's program. Fellas, good morning. And I think we can begin with this as we are all, I think, running our Netflix accounts, HBO, Hulu into the ground during this coronavirus and during the quarantine. But good news announced yesterday, as Andrew Marchand had this in a New York Post, ABC's ESPN 10-part series on the Bulls and Michael Jordan, which was originally slated to open up and be on ESPN and ABC in June. They announced that they're going to actually now offer this beginning on Sunday, April 19th. Paulie, I know that, like all of us, you're super excited about this.
Well, this is the right move. I was calling for this a couple of weeks ago, like many people on Twitter. Now we actually have a calendar, Matt. We got a calendar, right? We got the UFC April 18th. We get this thing's 10 parts. It's April 19th. Then we got the NFL draft. And we'll have you can give us a front row seat and all the stories. I can't believe you covered this team. Unbelievable.
Yeah, you think about it, that was 1997-98 were the last 2 years I covered the Bulls. Seems like a lifetime ago, man. It was so long ago. But this is going to be a great 10-part series, Paul. You and I talked about this last night. Why not move it up? So ESPN's moved it up, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's good. I mean, like you said, you compared the Bulls to the Beatles. I mean, they were like the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, whatever. It was like a rock and roll band. So many characters, so many great stories. And, you know, ESPN always does a great job with these 30 for 30. So I think this is going to be an outstanding documentary. Hey, I just wanted to make sure you guys got this in the mail. I just went out to the post office or went to the mailbox and got President Trump's coronavirus guidelines for America. Did you guys get this tonight?
I have not seen that yet.
Okay, well, if you need a copy of it, I'm going to read this after the show. I'm going to read this very carefully. If you guys need a copy of this, I'll take a screenshot and send it to you after the show.
Okay, it's kind of like a checklist then? Like is it like a power rating of things to do in order now that we're all quarantined?
Yeah, I've watched his press conference. He seems to have a pretty good handle on this and what we should do. So I'm going to read this very carefully, and I'll send it to you guys if you need a copy. You know, I think it's very pertinent right now, too, because the producer of this show the past week, Kelly Bidlin, is home sick tonight, and we're hoping he does not have the coronavirus.
Yeah, and then the guy before him was sick, too. So I know. Yes, you're right. I'll tell you what, as popular as Jordan, can you imagine if he played today and with social media and the stuff that Jordan would do week in, week out? Jordan would be even more popular if he played today.
Well, here's the beauty of that, though, right? Like Jordan as an individual and the Bulls back then as rock stars as a team, they probably couldn't do 70% of the stuff they did.
No.
Right? I mean, everybody has, bam, here you go. Now you're going to go on social media right now. I can record anything that you're doing and the stuff that wasn't available. So anything that Jordan, how many times do you think if people had cell phones back then and Jordan lived his life, he actually would have been spotted playing blackjack early hours, whatever. I mean, doing something crazy.
Oh, yeah, before the playoff game.
Yeah, there was no privacy, right, Paul? I mean, the players back then had a lot more privacy than they do now, and that's, I think, an important point.
Yeah, at AC the night before a playoff game against the Knicks. But my point was just about, I mean, this LeBron-Jordan stuff would end, and we'd never hear about it again. I mean, if Jordan played today, just, you know, 55 points, fifth game back when he comes out of retirement, scoring six, averaging out 38 a game at one season, and when you could maul people. So I think he'd average at least 40 a game if he played today. And the other thing, we'll see what do you guys think? We talked about this a little bit yesterday, Mitch. We were so excited about Tiger Phil, and we still are. Why do you got to go and try? I don't want to watch Tom Brady golf. Yeah. I don't want to watch Peyton Manning golf. Don't screw this up. This would be a huge betting handle. You can hopefully put this together in a couple weeks. The first one I like that they did right out here at Shadow Creek, Tiger against Phil. Let's do it again. What do you got to get Brady and Peyton Manning involved for?
Well, and welcome into the program. It is Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard, and Matt Youmans. We'll talk to Adam Hill coming up in a minute, but I mean, Matt, go ahead. I totally agree with Paul. I don't want to see Brady or Manny. I don't want to see any quarterbacks. I don't want to see anybody else out there on the course with these two guys.
Yeah, it cheapens the competition. And, you know, we talked about Tiger Phil part one, and Mickelson got the better of Tiger last year at Shadow Creek. It was not really good golf, but I mean, it's at this point, I believe it would be a great betting event. And it's, you know, Tiger with a revenge factor after kind of getting embarrassed last year at Shadow Creek. The information that came out was it's going to be a pay-per-view event. That's the plan. But the caveat is that each player will have a partner. Two names being mentioned, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. I would guess, I think Manning's a better golfer. I would assume it's going to be Tiger and Brady against Phil and Peyton. But, you know, let's, like you said, let's exclude the quarterbacks. I think this is something that really could be a pretty good weekly competition. You know, this it's easy to stage in a time of social distancing. Why not match two golfers up? Two different golfers each week. You know, Tiger and Phil could be the first one. You could almost have a tournament after that.
There you
could have two guys go head to head each week, and it's like a tournament. And this could play out through the summer. I think this would be really easy to do, and it'd be a a pretty good betting event.
Right church, wrong pew. It should be Dustin Johnson and JT or somebody, or Rory McIlroy, right. Two other golfers as well. What's the appropriate in these with these tough times? What's the appropriate fee for this? What do you, $19.99?
Sure.
$30?
No, $19.99 sounds about right to me.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd stick in that price range.
All right, Adam Hill joins the program now. He covers the UFC and pretty much everything else around Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Adam, it's good to talk to you. I guess it's no surprise, right? This fight between Khabib and Ferguson has now been on again, off again. This is the fifth time that this actually happened. So asking you to speculate on what's going to happen next. I know Gaethje was rumored last night to be the guy fighting Ferguson. If you asked Dana White, he would have the fight in front of a million people, I think, in the Las Vegas Strip. But what do you think takes place next year for the UFC?
I think Brady versus Manning.
Okay, I like it.
You in for that? I'll watch that fight.
$39.99. Sign me up.
I'll pay $100. I don't even care. I want to fight. It'll be great. This is a mess. For the backstory again, I think we talked about it last time, but for those that haven't heard it, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Tony Ferguson, is like the great mystery fight of all time in the UFC. This is a fight that they have scheduled four times before. It's been canceled four times before. One time it was canceled, Khabib Nurmagomedov was making fun of the fact that he might not make weight. He ate tiramisu on camera a couple nights before the fight and then fell ill trying to cut weight, had to pull out of the fight the night before. Then Tony Ferguson, making fun of Khabib for pulling out, tripped over a TV cord during an interview, tore a knee ligament, and had to miss the fight the next time. Four times scheduled, four times canceled, and this time it looks like it's off. Now, there's no confirmation that it's off, but here's what happened. Both were training in California for this fight. It was supposed to be in Brooklyn. They lost Brooklyn. Obviously, they can't go to New York. The Nevada Athletic Commission said they can't come here. So Nurmagomedov was told by the UFC this is probably going to happen in Abu Dhabi. So Nurmagomedov said, okay, I don't want to travel from California over there. I'm going to go train in Abu Dhabi and finish my training there for the fight. So he gets there. He arrives in Abu Dhabi 9 days ago. The government there is like, we're closing the borders. You can't come in. What are you doing? So he went back to Russia to finish his training, and now Russia is telling him he can't leave. So if the fight is going to be in the U.S., Nurmagomedov is like, I'm not allowed to leave Russia. I'm stuck here, so I can't fight in the U.S. So it's just a total disaster right now of what's going on, and nobody still knows where it's going to be, because while a lot of people think that they'd be able to get it done over there, they just it doesn't look like logistically it's going to happen. There's just too many people that would have to travel. So people believe Florida now is the most likely place because Ron DeSantis, the governor in Florida, has basically just shrugged his shoulders at coronavirus and said, I don't care, even though he's got an entire population of old people there. Makes no sense. So basically people are saying, well, Florida will let us fight there. But then Florida yesterday finally puts in basically a stay-at-home order, essentially. So now Florida might not be a possibility either, although – you know, Ron DeSantis did change yesterday, and a lot of people were speculating. He came out and said May 15th their order is up, and then he comes back out an hour later and says, I'm at April 15th. So maybe people are hopeful that that April 15th date now means April 18th would be in play for the UFC to try to go there. But it is a disaster. Even if they have the fights, who knows who's fighting? You said Justin Gaethje said he'd fight. Why would Tony Ferguson take that fight? He's got that massive payday against Nurmagomedov coming at some point. Why would he give up his spot in line and potentially lose that fight to Gaethje and then be knocked out of contention?
Could Putin engage in hijinks and shenanigans here and say, yeah, let the kid go. Let Habib travel. Just
of course. I mean, Trump could call Putin and tell him, hey, we need this to happen. Let the guy over. Sure he can. Does Nurmagomedov really want to do it, though? I mean, his training camp has been thrown off so much. He traveled over to California, then he went to Abu Dhabi, then he went to Russia. Now he's going to travel again and have his camp completely thrown off. I mean, he's an undefeated fighter that would be putting that record on the line for a fight that's kind of turned into a disaster. I don't know that he necessarily wants to do it, but could they make something happen behind the scenes? Sure. This is just, it's such a mess. I don't think if I was a fighter at that level, that I don't think I'd want any part of this event. You don't know where it's going to be. There was jokes yesterday. They're going to have it at Alcatraz. Like, where are they going to go? Like, it's a mess. I don't know that I would want to do that. I don't know that I'd want to be a part of this event, but some fighters, they do need the money. They want to be a part of it. And you know, there probably is some paydays on the line here. If you can work your way to this event and show the UFC that you really want to be a part of it, maybe you get a bump in pay. But if I'm Nurmagomedov at that level, I'm not putting that on the line.
Is there a drop dead date about when they need to know when this, who's on the rest of the card and when they can do this and make it official and everyone has to travel?
I mean, I think if you ask Dana White, he would say if they set something April 17th, the night before, they could just go ahead and throw it together. I don't think that there's any rhyme or reason to what's going on. They've been bouncing all over the place. And, you know, they had a deal in place with an Indian reservation in Oklahoma for the fight 2 weeks ago that they were on their way to, and they were going to go there on 3 days' notice to just throw an event together. They are at that point now where they need the cash flow coming in. I mean, Endeavor, their parent company, is in a tough spot right now because they're so leveraged with all this debt. They can't make movies. They can't make TV shows. They can't make any of those things anymore. And they need some cash flow coming in. So that's part of why the UFC has been so insistent that they want to do this. Plus, Dana White wants to show his support for Trump and kind of say, hey, the economy can get back going again. So he wants to do it for those reasons. There's a lot of reasons that they're really trying to make this fight happen. They're just really swimming uphill at this point because where are you going to go? How are you going to do this? It's a total disaster.
Wow. I like the Alcatraz idea. That's one of my favorite spots on Earth. I've been to Alcatraz three times. I love that place. It'd be a great place to stage a fight like that. Why not on a maybe an aircraft carrier or something? I've heard that idea floated, maybe on a boat in international waters. Who knows? Adam, you said a week ago on this show that Dana White called you and said, this fight's going to happen. He screamed, this fight's going to happen. I would assume at this point, if you're making a line, you're going to say this fight is an underdog to happen.
Well, the fight is, I mean, the main event is a huge underdog to actually happen. With the event happening, I would say, I'm going to put it, yes, plus $2.
Oh, so
the event happens.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, hey, let me ask you.
Because there's so many variables.
Let me follow up then and ask you this: what happens first, this fight actually happening sometime, or John Jones fighting again in the UFC?
Oh, I mean that's going to be a while. I mean that's such a mess right now. It's a terrible situation, obviously, for John Jones, who you know, continues to insist every time he comes back that he's matured and he's turned a new leaf and this is a new John Jones. And then he's at a point where he's not even supposed to go out of the house. Nobody is. The whole state of New Mexico is locked down. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go for a joyride and shoot a gun off around some homeless people. I don't know why. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know what he was doing. I mean, amateur, you know, psychologist or amateur diagnosis, he's got a very bad substance abuse problem and he can't get it under control. And it makes him do really bad, crazy things and irresponsible things all the time. But, you know, he went to rehab for one day and said he was cured. I don't think that's how it works. I'm no expert, but I'm pretty sure that's not the case. It's a terrible situation. And, you know, last time he was in court, I know a lot of people have been posting this clip again, but the judge in Albuquerque, you know, as John Jones was walking out, he stopped him. He made Jones come back to the stand, and he goes, "Do not return to this courtroom." He said, "Do not come back here." And, you know, you would have to think that the legal system in New Mexico is a little frustrated with John Jones at this point.
Yeah. Well, how about the rest of the calendar and what's coming up? Yeah, good call.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Adam, April 25th, they have a card. May 2nd, they have a card. May 9th, they have a card. They've also canceled three events before April 18th. And what's the update with Apex? I mean, if Dana White wants to do a couple cards a week, I mean, is this ever going to happen in May, or when can this happen?
I mean, we'll see. I think a lot has to do with when Nevada relaxes their regulations, because essentially they were going to go. They have, you know, you mentioned the Apex. They have their facility. It's basically a TV studio with like 100 seats that could probably extend out to like 1,000, maybe even a little more than that. But it's a very, very small space that they would be, you know, it's a perfect place to do it if you're not going to have a crowd. But the Nevada Athletic Commission basically just said, no, you can't do it. That's more than 10 people in a room, and 10 is kind of the limit right now. So if Nevada relaxed that, you know, regulation, I think the UFC would be in there in a heartbeat. I think they just want to put on the cards and fulfill their TV spots. And right now they've kind of have the spotlight to themselves in terms of the sporting calendar. So I think it makes a lot of sense for them to try to do something like that. It's just, if until you relax that 10 person limit, there's really not a whole lot they can do unless they try to find some place. And like I said, that venue in Oklahoma was going to let them do it until Trump put in the further regulations. When it was 50, it was fine. When it was 10, it just didn't make any sense, because, you know, you start counting, it's two fighters, a ref, three judges, two camera people, and a cornerman for each guy, and you're already over a 10 right now. So it's just going to be very tough to put it together as long as those regulations are in place. But it looks like those are at least through the end of the month. So we'll find out, you know, if at, you know, May 1st, that seems optimistic, but if those regulations are relaxed as is in place right now, then I think they can start, you know, looking at doing those cards. And the other thing, just real quick on Nurmagomedov, I think I mentioned it before when I was on, but they can't delay that Nurmagomedov fight at all. Nurmagomedov will not fight between the beginning of Ramadan, which is April 23rd, and September. So once you miss this April 18th date with Nurmagomedov, he's off until the fall, and there's really nothing you can do about that.
All right, we've talked a lot about UFC here. We're with Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. If you look at his picture on the screen, you can see Adam looking very uncomfortable wearing a tie. Adam, I would assume you don't wear
it. It's a long time ago.
I haven't seen you wear a tie too often. I think that might have been a one-time thing. Hey, Robin Leonard, the new goalie of the Vegas Golden Knights, said this week he thinks the hockey season's over. We've talked a lot on this show the past week about the NBA playoff possibility of 16 teams being in Las Vegas, maybe in July and August, and that being a one-month format for the NBA playoffs, which seems like it might be doable. Do you think that's more likely than the NHL playoffs actually happening? Because he seemed to be pretty certain that the NHL season is over, and you do cover hockey as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's real tough. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people around the Golden Knights, a couple of people around the league, and there's just no real... you know, the players kind of got together and put their proposal for starting the, you know, just saying, hey, July 1st is the date that you jump back in and get it done. I think it's going to be real tough for the NHL to do it without fans. I mean, that's a lot of revenue that they bring in. You know, it's much, you know, a huge portion of what they do. And then the playoffs are their big time on TV too. So, I mean, I think they want to do everything they possibly can to get this done. It would just be, it's such a massive loss for them. The NBA, you feel like, will bounce back, but the NHL not having the playoffs is just such a disaster for that league. So I think they're both going to try to do everything they possibly can. The idea was floated out. I saw this week a lot of people here around Vegas talking about it, that you could have a tournament for the NBA come to Las Vegas. I think that would make a lot of sense. I mean, NBA is the, you know, Vegas is kind of the home of the NBA in the summer anyway. So to have a playoff, a tournament kind of thing, where everybody comes here and everybody gets tested and kind of quarantined away. If you could pull something like that off, I think that would be cool. I like the idea of the island, kind of make it a reality show, put everybody on an island, and then you go home when you lose. That's brilliant. I would love that. That's the kind of thing I want to watch. So all these ideas are just floating around out there, which I like all of them. I just hope something is able to be salvaged on both of those ends. And then I think, you know, it's possible that the NBA does use this to change their season. There's been talk about going to December anyway. I know that's Mark Cuban's idea, to go and, you know, start around Christmas and have that be the kickoff instead of just kind of a regular day on the calendar where you have a bunch of games, just have that be opening night. I like that idea, and I think this would be a good way to make that happen. But then all of a sudden the players don't get those summers off that they like so much. They'd have to adjust their calendar completely. But I think that would be a good way for them to kind of make that happen.
Adam, we have 30 seconds here. Give me an honest grade of Tiger King.
Oh, it's an absolute A. Now, I think there's some bias that goes into this because, like, we all need something to watch right now. And this was something that jumped off so much to everybody on social media. But a documentary like that with so many twists and turns, like, you never know where it's going. I think it's just an incredible work that they put together, and all of the follow-up stories that they couldn't even get in there. There's so much stuff still going on.
Great spot, Ed. Thank you for the time. Good, we have win lose coming up.
D minus.
All right, so VSiN has a new Point Spread Weekly out tomorrow, and VSiN's experts take you through the process of making your own power ratings. Many of you have asked for more information about this topic, and Matt Heumann, Steve Mackinnon, Paul Stone, and Bruce Marshall detail their methods. This is going to be great. Sign up for a VSiN Plus subscription absolutely free. You won't be asked to pay until a major U.S. sport returns to action. Sign up today to join VSiN Plus. Visit VSiN.com. That's VSIN.com to learn more. Here we go. It's time for win-lose.
Rough night.
Can't call it a bad beat. Definitely lose some.
Good night. How does it make you feel?
I absolutely hate them. I absolutely hate them.
Follow the Money Looks Back so we can learn for today.
Everything's an adventure.
In Win Some, Lose Some. Let the education commence.
All right, let's rumble. I know The Rock did an interview years ago, and they asked him, what does he eat on his cheat day? He said he has a dozen donuts from Krispy Kreme, and he lets loose on Sunday. Look at this cheat day yesterday. Look at that French toast. Look at that thing. Look at the size. That's two bricks he's eating. That's The Rock's cheat day. It's the massive French toast. That is impressive as he gets to let loose here once a week. And Matt, it happened again. Winsome. Look at this better at William Hill. A $5 nine-team soccer parlay that hit for $2,900.
That's amazing. You know, we talked about that yesterday with the 10-team table tennis parlay that hit for $9,500. Uh-huh. And now we have a soccer parlay that hits. And
couple dogs.
Actually got five dogs on this parlay, it looks like, Paul. So yes. Yesterday it was 10 favorites. And on this parlay, five dogs and five favorites.
Yep. This is a good tweet from a guy's landlord. He goes, two incredible texts from my landlord. Number one, Carol definitely killed him. That's Tiger King. Followed up by, don't worry about the rent this month. How great is that? Just feeling good all the time. That's awesome. And, hey, you know, quarantine, nothing to do. Have Granny come over. Little table tennis, little ping pong, no big deal. Oh, no, watch out. Oh, no. She runs right into the cabinet and ass over tea kettle. Here comes everything coming down. It's raining cups and dishes and everything. Hey, is Granny.
One request for the fellas downstairs. If you could crank up the volume. This, it adds so much to the video here.
Yeah, it was good. Good call. Oh, man. Goes head first into it. And lose some? Me. I'm going to star in the remake, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Can we get good news once here in the last three? When are we going to get good news? Now this fight card is probably not going to happen with the UFC. This is an abomination. Well, can we cut the bike in half, too? Can we go to like 25 people? Everyone says how important sports are and that we need sports and an escape. Let's have sports. I mean, can the Nevada State Athletic Commission say, run it at Apex. It's just you guys and 20 people. It'll be fine. Just move it up to 2025. I'm losing my mind here.
You're not the only one. I mean, I had a conversation about this specifically last night with like a longtime friend of mine. We were talking about golf. And, you know, we talked about the Tiger Phil thing earlier. Don't get cute with this thing. Just you two out there in the course or add a couple of other professional golfers. We're good to go. I think, again, pay-per-view, put it at prime time, whatever you want to do. That would give everybody in this country some relief. But I'm with you, Paul. I have been more than glass half full guy. I have been as positive as one could possibly be through this time. But the more we drag this out, I'm just like, come on. It's just like you're getting hit over the head with a shovel every single day.
I don't know. I think you guys need to take this seriously. I have here the President Trump's coronavirus guidelines for America. It says avoid gatherings of more than 10 people. So I'm not sure that we can make an exception for that.
It's brought to you by First Bet. Win, lose, always brought to you by First Bet, the brand new app from Express Bet. Wagering in all the top tracks, AI-enhanced handicapping tools to tap into a library of more than 200,000 past races to identify horses racing today that fit a winning pattern. Stats and probabilities you won't find anywhere else. Visit first.com/bet for more info. Promo code VEASAN500, all one word, and get a $10 free bet as soon as you sign up. Plus, receive up to a $500 bonus for a wager in your first 30 days. First.com/bet. Support the sponsors and thanks to ExpressBet. We love you.
Let's follow the money here on VEASAN, the sports betting network. Mitch Moss, Paulie Howard, Matt Youmans with you today. Up next, some hardcore NFL. Todd McShay released his latest mock draft last night. Very good stuff. And we have plenty of other draft props to get into. And I like this idea. You can bet on the exact finish in each NFL division. That's pretty cool. Coming up next here, VEASAN, the sports betting network. The NFL draft is now 24 days away. April 23rd is round number one. And Paulie, I know Todd McShay released his latest mock draft last night with Scott Van Pelt. It's on ESPN.com right now. No surprise, he has Joe Burrow going number one overall. Chase Young, two, followed by Okuda from Ohio State, number three. And there's more and more steam with him to go top three now. And I've seen his draft position move to 3.5. But what else stood out to you?
Well, Matt's guy, he has Simmons going fourth, and that's Matt's guy as well. So he has 12 wide receivers going in the first two rounds. He has 6 wide receivers in the first round. That's important. I'll tell you why in a second. As we discussed yesterday with Matt, and also listening to Matt Miller's mock draft, too, on Bleacher Report, I agree with Matt Youmans. About 8 or 9, we're going to see a run on wide receivers. And I think you're going to see a ton of wide receivers go in the first round. And I don't know who the first guy is going to be. Again, as I said yesterday, I think there's value with Ruggs at plus 420 to be the first wide receiver selected. But then I think you'll see Judy, Ruggs, and Lamb, and a run on wide receivers go. Jefferson, first round. Where does Higgins go? And Caesars has 6.5 wide receivers in the first round. William Hill has 5.5. I think that's going to fall 6. I absolutely think that falls 6. And maybe Higgins and then Chenault, the kid from Colorado, will decide if it's going to be 7.
Yeah, in the first mock draft I did, I had 7 wide receivers going in the first round. Now, one at the very end of the first round, LaVisca Chenault of Colorado to the Packers. I think there's a decent chance the Packers will take a wide receiver in that spot, but you're going to see a run on wide receivers between around the 10th pick and the 21st pick. I think you could have five off the board by that spot. And I really, Paul, I like that over 5.5 play at William Hill. But if you want to shoot for the under, go ahead and shoot for the middle. Play it over 5.5 at William Hill, under 6.5 at Caesars, because I do think there's a decent chance, probably a pretty good chance, this lands on 6. I think it's going to be 6 or 7 wide receivers in the first round. So I'm going to play over 5.5 at William Hill, and then possibly take that middle shot, like you said, with Caesars posting that total at 6.5.
Yep. He has Judy. This is McShay. Judy going 11th, Lamb 12th, Ruggs 13th. He's going to go down with the ship. He's not married to it, he said, but he has Love 6th and Herbert 9th. And, I mean, a lot of people disagree with him on that one, including myself. I think Love's going to go in the mid-20s, something like that. And I tell you, another guy listening to these mocks and reading these mocks, Matt, a guy whose stock is dropping is Becton. He has Becton going 14th, and his prop is 7.5 at William Hill. I like that over.
You know, it's interesting because Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network, has got Mekhi Becton of Louisville as his, I think, his 6th overall best player in this draft. So I've seen him as high as 4th. Mm-hmm. I've seen him slipping out of the top 10. I've also, now your head can spin. You read so many of these mock drafts, and you don't know which ones have the most credibility. If you talk to Michael Lombardi, he will tell you very few of them have credibility. But I've also seen Jeff Okuda drop all the way out of the top 10. You know, and now you're talking about him at the number 3 spot. So it's about who you believe and how much homework you do on these. You got to read a lot of stories on this stuff to kind of see through the smoke screens to who you think these teams are going to select. I tend to think I like Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State, a lot. But I tend to think he's going to drop, and I lean over 3.5 on his draft position.
Okay. Yeah, you're right, Matt, because you need to be careful with how many you take in, and I think Lombardi is spot on with, because if you just Google NFL mock draft, you can get stuck in like a Google vortex for days because there are going to be like 1,000 that pop up. I've seen Becton go 4 overall to the Giants, but also earlier in March, when Ruggs was around 6-1 or higher to go number 1 overall as a wide receiver, I did see one mock draft, I think it was March 4th actually, where he was going number 4 overall to the Giants. But that's the only mock draft I've seen Ruggs going that high. So if you want to read 20 of them, that's fine, but I think you can only confuse yourself when you do that.
Yeah, I read 4 or 5 mock drafts, and I've got my own opinions, and read a lot of stories about these things. I think you can... It's kind of dangerous to read too many.
Yep.
You kind of pick out the guys you think have the most credibility and read those mock drafts and kind of write down the draft positions for each player and study those. And I think that can be a guideline for you if you're going to make your bets on these draft positions over or under. But you have to pick the guys you think have the most credibility. And that Jordan Love situation is very interesting because Todd McShay has him going 5th, and I think Mel Kiper has Love going 23rd. You know, so you got two guys who work together on ESPN with vastly different opinions on where the Utah State quarterback is going to go. I think if a quarterback slips, it's going to be Love. I really find it hard to believe that Justin Herbert is going to slip out of the top 10. I don't even think Herbert gets past the number 6 pick, and I think Love slips out of the top 10, if anything.
Well, I will give you this. In 2 recent drafts leading up to it, and again, reading as many mock drafts as possible, trying to find value with these props, nobody had Joey Bosa going number 3 to the Chargers a couple of years ago. And I don't think there was one person on the planet who had the Farrell kid from Clemson going number 4 overall to Oakland. I was stunned watching the draft last year when they popped him number 4 overall. I didn't see that coming. Nobody did.
Nobody had that. Now, that was a reach by the Raiders, and I still think looking back, you guys, you know, 1 year later, I still don't think it was a very wise pick by the Raiders. What do you think?
I would agree. And Pro Football Focus never had a good grade on him throughout the entire year during his rookie season. So no, I think that was a total reach.
Hey, how about this prop? 2nd offensive player drafted. It's 2 is like $1.30. If you guys flash that graphic up again, what do you think of that, Matt?
I like Tua to be the 2nd offensive player drafted. I like him to be the 2nd pick of the draft. I think there's a decent chance somebody's going to trade up to get him. But if not, Tua is definitely going to be, he will go after, I don't think an offensive tackle, Paul, would go before Tua, but just simply because of the value of a quarterback when you're drafting that high, I would think you'd be crazy to take an offensive tackle when you could trade your pick and trade down a little bit and, you know, trade the pick to a team that wants to pick Tua, because the value of a quarterback is so much higher than the value of an offensive tackle. I think Tua is going to be the second offensive player off the board.
Yep. I would agree with both of you on that. But I will tell you this. Coming up next, we will play you a piece of audio. And I like this guy. He's been really, really good. He won me a bunch of money a couple of years ago in the draft when he came on with us on VSiN. He's saying, per one source anyway, involved in the league, that Tua might not be the second quarterback taken, according to this guy. We will play you the audio on that. Coming up next, along with betting other props and division exact finishes and divisions in the NFL. Coming up next here on VSiN. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will go over what the Westgate Superbook odds would look like if we get the NBA and the NHL playoffs with the exact matchups in the opening round. They have numbers. They've been posted on Twitter. We'll go over those at that time. So this is what I was talking about in the previous segment. This is from Matt Miller on Bleacher Report. And if you go back a couple of drafts ago, he came on the air with us on VSiN. And I remember asking him the question, who goes for, because there was a specific prop up that was who's drafted first, Saquon Barkley, or I believe it was Josh. It was either Josh Rosen or Josh Allen. And I asked him the question, and he just laughed. He goes, oh, that's Barkley, easy. And Barkley was plus 190. Barkley went second overall in the draft, and he got that one right. He's been really good. He does like a full seven-round mock draft, which I can't even imagine how difficult that would be. But this is Matt Miller talking about what some executives are telling him regarding Herbert versus Tua.
Multiple teams prefer Justin Herbert to Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa because of injuries and the unknowns. And I was actually talking to a high-level team exec yesterday, and he said, you know, in a normal year, you could honestly make the argument Tua should be the number two overall pick and maybe the number one overall pick. But because you're taking a third party's word for it when it comes to his medicals at this point in time, that teams are just going to be a little bit hesitant. And because of that, this guy and other team officials as well have told me, don't be surprised if Justin Herbert is the second quarterback pick because there are no questions about injuries when it comes to his evaluation.
That's Matt Miller, Bleacher Report. I don't know. Paul, what do you think when you hear that?
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. And also what's surprising is the guys on Bleacher Report, all they don't like Herbert. And they think that he could go, they would have him in the mid-20s. I don't understand where this anti-Herbert, I don't understand where it's coming from. I mean, at least these GMs, this is refreshing because they realize talent, and they also realize he had a couple buffoons for on the coaching staff. 6'6", 32 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 3,500 yards. And as Matt said, like the Rose Bowl and other games, like they were trying to hide him with the dink and dunk throwing 5 yards. They finally said, unleash hell, let's use Herbert. And you saw what he did in the Pac-12 title game when they let him run. And they saw the Arizona State game when they were pressed into going hurry up because they were down so big. They went touchdown, touchdown, touchdown when they went up-tempo against Arizona State on the road. I think it's like we'll get into this a little bit with Phil Simms, and we touched on it briefly yesterday. Replace the quarterbacks. Put Herbert in Alabama and put Tua in Oregon. Then talk to me about what happened. Look at the weapons that one guy had, and look at the horrific coaching staff that one guy had.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, you know, the Oregon offense had weapons, but it wasn't a very intelligently schemed offense. I thought Marcus Arroyo, the offense coordinator, did a really poor job. I was talking about that first half of that Rose Bowl game where it was all five-yard passes and screen passes. You got a senior quarterback who's a top 10 pick, air it out, throw the ball downfield. And I know a lot of Oregon fans were frustrated with that offense as well, and they were actually kind of happy to see, a lot of them were happy to see Marcus Arroyo go. So, you can't hold that against Justin Herbert when you're analyzing a pro prospect. You know, a year ago at this time, I felt strongly that Herbert was going to be the top pick in this draft. Like, say, 6'6", 240. He's a really sharp kid. I knew he was going to impress teams in the interviews and in the combine, and that's what happened. I think he's rising up the charts. My concern with Tua has always been the same. I think he's injury prone. He's an injury waiting to happen in the NFL. I think his career probably, I hate to say this, he seems like a good kid, don't want to predict it, but I think he's going to be bothered by injuries for most of his NFL career. So go with a guy like Justin Herbert, who I think had a good shot to be the number one pick if Joe Burrow didn't come out of nowhere and go from 16 touchdown passes to 60 mm-hmm. in 1 year. So, you know, but again, when you're betting draft props in the mock draft, it's not what you think. It's how you think the teams are going to draft. So maybe the teams are changing their minds a little bit, because all I've read for a couple months is, yeah, there are concerns about Tua's injury status, but teams love him at the top, and they're going to take, you know, he's always been ranked as the second best quarterback behind Joe Burrow. And now we're starting to hear a little different storyline, but this happens every year before the draft. The stories change a little bit. It's who do you believe? What do you believe? I still think that Tua is probably going to be the second quarterback off the board, even though I prefer Justin Herbert.
Mm-hmm. One more thing with the coaching staff last year at Oregon, the RPOs. And the option plays. And you said you guys brought up like the 5 yard passes. How many times did we have to see Oregon in, you know, let this guy bring out that cannon for an arm that he has. And here you go with another RPO and he's going to carry the ball around in an option play. It's like, is that the whole plan here in the first quarter? Or what do you guys, do you right. want to mix it up maybe a little bit here?
You know, Herbert could have put up Joe Burrow type of numbers if he had Joe Brady designing the passing game. Like he did for LSU. You look at Oregon's offense and LSU's offense, it was two different worlds. And I really think the Oregon coaches kind of squandered Justin Herbert's strongest assets.
It's a tough call. I mean, this is why there's so many swings and misses. I mean, that look at Burrow, the guy's who had one good year of football.
Yeah.
Maybe he goes to the Bengals and he doesn't have Brady. Maybe he struggles. I mean, look what happened the previous year with LSU, and the guy couldn't even beat out some of these quarterbacks at Ohio State and other places. Right. And the other thing is, here's Phil. This is good too. This is Phil Sims on Herbert. This was Saturday on the Lombardi line.
And then Justin Herbert, Phil.
Oh, well, Justin Herbert, I like him a lot. You know, you got to be careful. As I always say this, judge the player, quit judging the team, the coach, and all that. And Justin Herbert played in not a pro-style offense, but what he was asked to do, a couple things. His size, I think his mobility is going to be a big factor in the NFL. You know, maybe his first step or two are not the fastest in the world, but, man, once he gets that third step, he's going to outrun guys. He's going to have 40- and 50-yard runs if he plays somewhere next year in the NFL. I think his arm is outstanding. Had to make a lot of tough throws, a lot of downfield throws for the Oregon Ducks, and I liked it. I think he has good touch. I think he went down to the Senior Bowl, showed everybody that, hey, he's, you know, not some secluded guy up in Eugene, Oregon. His personality showed a little bit. His talent definitely showed. And I thought he looked good at the combine, too. You know, so he didn't get to play and a pro offense. He didn't get to play like Joe Burrow did or Tua. If he'd have been on those teams, he would have thrown up magnificent numbers too, that's for sure.
Totally agree.
Yep.
Totally agree. And Matt touched on it earlier as well. I agree with that.
Yep. Let me throw this at you. There is a global book that is offering exact finishes in the NFL, divisions and all of them. For example, and I'll throw this one out there, NFC West. If you think the Cardinals are going to be finished anywhere but be a cellar dweller, if you think they're going to finish third ahead of the Rams but behind the Seahawks and the 49ers, you can get them at 3-1. Second place overall is plus 450. They run down every single team in every single division. And I thought about this last night. That's actually a good idea for a contest that a book could add, having bettors come and try to predict the exact finish for every single division. Do you know how difficult that is? Hell, getting like one division exactly right isn't exactly easy. To get all eight possibly correct, that's not that. I don't think, I mean, you can do it, sure, but that's really, really difficult to do. And I think that would be a good idea for a contest.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good idea for bookmaker, too. I bet the hold percentage is going to be pretty good on this.
Yeah.
Like you said, Mitch, it's going to be very difficult to predict these final standing. Just look at the AFC South. How do you predict that with the Texans, mm-hmm. Colts, and Jaguars each at the top? Jaguars, the Titans, Colts, and Titans, Colts, and Texans at the top. You got the Titans plus 175, Colts plus one. Titans plus 150, Colts plus 175, Texans plus $2. That's one I might actually be interested in, playing the Colts at plus 175 if I'm confident that, Phillip Rivers has enough weapons around him. I like this Colts team a lot. Rivers is one question mark to me. Does he still have enough to help the Colts win this division? But if you look at the Colts as a whole, you know, they had so many kicking issues. Like, they were a 7-9 team, could have easily been a 10-6 team last season. Probably lost two games because of the kicker. They lost four games by 4 points or fewer. Another game in overtime. The Colts are this close to being an elite team in the AFC. I've just got a couple questions about Phillip Rivers. But the Colts are plus 175. That's something I would think about playing. Otherwise, I looked at all these divisions, and I think you're kind of chasing your tail if you're going to try to predict the order of finish in these. It's like you said, it's almost an impossible task.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you one. And I know, Paul, you brought this up last week. The Chiefs at some spots are like 390 to win the AFC West. At this book, they're minus 350. So just for the sake of this segment, let's assume that the Chiefs win this division for a second, right? Then who finishes second? You can get to finish second. The Chargers are plus 250. The Raiders are plus 250, and the Broncos are plus 225. So if you're like super strong on the Chargers being the second best team in that division and they finish second, you don't have to bet them to win the division at plus $8. You can actually bet them to finish second at plus 250. And if it comes in, then you can say, well, that was a pretty damn good bet.
I don't know about that one, but that's the win total 7.5. I don't know about the Broncos either. That would be tough. I know Tyrod Taylor's talking a lot of trash about, I'm going to show a lot of people, but good luck. That remains to be seen. I tell you, going back to the AFC South, I wouldn't be surprised if the Colts or the Texans finish in last place. And as bad as Jacksonville looks right now, what if something happens to Rivers? I mean, he had 20 interceptions last year, and maybe he goes down, and then. Now you don't have Hopkins with the Texans too. I mean, maybe O'Brien screws that up as well. Maybe they go 5-11 or 6-10.
What if Burrow's the real deal and the Bengals, they've actually spent some money in free agency this year? What if they would surpass maybe the Browns and finish third? They are plus 325 to finish third place in that division. As maybe a look, but fun props. I like it. Always good to offer as much as possible. It's Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Up next, we will go over what the odds look like at the Superbook here in Las Vegas for first-round matchups in the NBA and the NHL. Coming up next here on VSiN.